Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Hickamode podcast, hosted by myself, William, and co-host Hannah. The Hickamode podcast is all about helping you discover career options by sharing career insights from people working across a range of industries. Today's guest works for a specialist market intelligence and advisory company. As the director for their business of data team, she is a content creator, podcast host, and event moderator, specializing in the field of data and analytics. In this episode, we'll be learning about the business of data and what are the potential career opportunities it has to offer.
Please join us in welcoming Catherine King.
Oh, thank you both so much. Pleasure to be here.
Catherine, it's great to have you on the show. How are you doing today?
I am doing good. You know what? I feel refreshed from a lovely weekend. And I think what better way to start my working week than chatting to you both?
Good stuff. Good stuff. We're really looking forward to hearing all about your career journey and the advice you have to share, as well as all the work you're doing around the business of data. As always, though, we do like to start with a game of two truths and a lie. So I think I'll start by handing over to yourself to get us started with two truths and a lie, please.
Sure thing. Okay. So number one, I have spoken in the Houses of Parliament, in the Houses of Commons. I have taught belly dance lessons. And I have travelled to over 8 countries.
I'm just making it belly dance.
Oh, this is difficult because I can think all three of these are true.
Yeah. I think the first one's true because I did see something actually on your LinkedIn about a youth parliament, I think it was. That one. 8 countries.
I think it's more than 8. It might be more than 8.
Yeah, maybe it's that. I reckon you've gone low on that. So I think that one's probably the lie. And because belly dance, I think there's a chance you may have got that because it is very random. Yeah. I'm going to go for 8 countries being the lie because I reckon you've been to more. I reckon you like to travel.
It is a lie, but actually, no, I think I've only been to around 6. I'm not as well traveled. I tend to go to the same places all the time. So it's the number count is slow. But yeah, that is the lie.
Good stuff. So teaching belly dance.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
So my aunt used to attend belly dance lessons, and I'm a bit of a magpie. I love anything shiny. And I used to go along when I was younger, and then, was taught and self-taught, and then at university they have a belly dance society, and I was asked to come and teach for a few years, which was so much fun. It was a really great opportunity to meet people from all sorts of backgrounds and just have a bit of fun. That was a couple of years ago now, so I'm not sure I could fit into many of my old costumes, but COVID does that to you, so I'll forgive myself.
Yeah, I think that's a good point around the university societies, actually, and the importance of actually when you're at university as well as studying, trying to get involved in some of those societies, you know, to build your friendship,
1,000%
networks, but then also, you know, make it an enjoyable experience and not just pressured around the studying.
100%. University has got to be more than the course you do. It expands you as a person. I mean, you know, depending on the societies you go for, especially around the cultural side, so belly dance, any kind of languages or culture, you meet just different people that you may not have traditionally met before. And I think that's always good to expand your own horizons in education. And, you know, life's a journey and life's all about learning. So if you can open yourselves up to that, it's good fun. But yeah, it's also the fun side of university as well. And I think, you know, we talk so much about the courses, the grades, and, you know, what class honours have you come out with? But actually, it's the soft side as well, meeting new people, enjoying your time, which is why I feel so sorry for those going through their degrees at the moment with COVID, and that being a very different type of experience from what I and many others would have experienced in person.
Yeah, Hannah's.
Yes, currently something I can relate to, absolutely. But even this year, just the beginning of this semester, I mean, it's been a significant improvement. I mean, there's a lot more society stuff and I'm definitely getting more involved. But we'll get more into that later into the podcast, I suppose.
Yeah. Should we jump straight in then, Hannah? Do you want
Let's
to
get into
kick
it,
off
yeah.
with some questions?
Yeah. So could you just tell us a bit about who you are, what you do, and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, so my name is Catherine King. I am the director for the business and data team here at Crinium. And I'm going to put the disclaimer in now that my views are my own. You've got to get that in, haven't you? So Crinium is a conference and event company. We have many portfolios in data analytics, IT, digital, AI, and information security. And then the business of data is our content platform. So this is where the podcast lives. This is where our video interviews live, our reports, articles, you name it, we've got it. It all lives there. How I got into this role is a bit of a journey. So I first came into Crinium about 3.5 years ago. I came in as a junior producer straight out of university, no experience in events or corporate world. Did that for around a year, and then I was brought into what we call our access team, which develops our custom events, so our intimate events, which is, you know, bringing a group of very senior executives together to have a particular discussion around a topic. And then it's just been over a year now that we've started the business of data as its platform. And I was brought over to that to help stand up the production element to that. So our LinkedIn Live discussions that we do, an annual top 100 list of global leaders and things like that. And then slowly but surely, with the pandemic occurring, we've had to shift our content. So a lot of that has been hosting virtual events, which I've been very fortunate to do, setting up our podcast and all things like that. So slowly but surely, I've kind of worked my way into a role of directing that content that's non-editorial. I don't tend to touch the reports and articles. It's not my area of expertise, but directing the podcast, as I say, our business of data show and things like that. So it's been a bit of a career journey so far through the company that I work with. But to be honest, that's pretty true of my life in general anyway, of just kind of not maybe taking the most traditional course.
Amazing. So for those that may not know, what is Business of Data? Or is that just the name of the platform that you make podcasts on?
Yeah, so that is the content name. So it's like the basic. It does what it says on the tin. It is the business behind the data. So this can be from very technical discussions. So we've done content around NLP, which is natural language processing, through to the more senior strategic discussions. So how are you going to get everyone in your organization using data to drive decisions, which is where we're seeing many organizations move towards. It's certainly the aspiration, but depending on the size of organization, depends on where they are on that journey. You've got your startups in the world who are, you know, a little bit, they're not having to suffer with what we call legacy, which is where they've got really old systems and lots of data, and they're trying to drag it into the 21st century. So we basically provide content to help leaders learn what others are doing and to better off what they're trying to achieve in their organizations.
That is so fascinating. So in terms of that, where do you actually see the future of, you know, data analytics and the business of data?
So, I mean, I'd love to say I've got a crystal ball, but I think it's going to be a non-negotiable. I think it's going to be something that we all look to as a standard. I think it will always complement that gut feel and that executive knowledge. You know, you can't disregard the 30, 40 years of experience an executive's going to have. But I do think what events like COVID has done is it's highlighted the need for up-to-date data to understand your market, to understand your customers. And I mean, just pulling on that thread around customers in general, their buying patterns change, what they want to see has changed. I mean, I'm sure each of us here on this call today can say that our knowledge of data in our own life has changed with Facebook and all the rest and the various scandals and hacks you see. We understand our data more than we ever have done. So in turn, organizations need to also understand their data more so than they ever have done before, not just from a legal and compliance stand, because at the end of the day, GDPR is now a thing. They, you know, there's a serious money side to this as well, that if you're not following the correct regulations, you'll get hit in the pocket. But also when it comes to customers, they want personalization. You don't want just generic adverts anymore. You want adverts that are very relevant to you. So that's where I think data is going to be a non-negotiable, and more organizations are going to be pushing in that way to really personalize their and niche down into what they offer, because that's where the competition is now.
No, 100%. 100%. Yeah, and in terms of...
I was just going to jump in because touching on the point with the increased amount of data that companies or businesses are collecting and then trying to turn that into meaningful information so then they can act accordingly or position their business and their service offering accordingly. Where are you seeing, or what types of job roles are you seeing being created, or are there any exciting job roles in that space that you would kind of encourage people to explore when exploring career options?
That's a really great question. So there's so many roles that are being created, and actually one of the biggest challenges the market's seeing right now is finding the people to fit them, because there's this huge demand, but there's not the supply. But anything with analysts behind it, product analyst, customer analyst, really the misconception is that you have to be hardcore maths, hardcore statistics, really up on your coding. But more and more organizations are moving into having platforms which are low code or no code. So really it's about understanding what data can provide for an organization, how you can do that. So again, the traditional route that has been for analyst type roles is you do your statistics, you do your maths at university, and you fall into a data science role, an analyst role, and you go on, and that's your trajectory. However, what we're seeing now is more roles appearing in the business side. So it's not just in the data analytics department, it's marketing analysts. What can they do? I'm sure many people listening will have received lots of marketing emails across their life. Well, there's going to be a lot of analytics behind that, A/B testing, finding out which email gets opened the most based off of a subject line. So it's being embedded into lots of departments. So it's very much that is a role that is going forward. But to be honest, anything in data and analytics, I think, is going to increase. And I think the awareness behind a lot of organizations is now there's not many people coming up from those traditional routes. So how else can we get these people involved? And you know, you can lend that then into a diversity and inclusion question, because stereotypically you do see a little bit more diversity in academia, but when you do come up to the corporate level, you aren't seeing as much diversity. There is a bit of a drop off there, but even so, the diversity you are seeing in academia is not fantastic. So actually expanding into other areas, going across to those doing the marketing degrees, or those doing like myself in social science, what you can then provide, you're going to get more diversity in that as well, which, you know, lends into a lot of the big problems we're seeing in the world today. I'm sure you may have watched Coded Bias on Netflix and all of those fun documentaries that make AI seem very, very petrifying. That's going to be the sort of thing that helps. So those are the sorts of roles that we're seeing and will continue to see.
Fantastic. So in terms of the industry just changing and being very fast paced, how do you personally keep up to date with that?
So I'm very, very lucky. I have a group of executives in the form of a global advisory board that we put together last year. People nominated themselves to join, and they're all C-suite executives, so chief data officers and such, or their equivalent of in their organization, so head of AI and all of that fun stuff. And I'm very fortunate to meet with them very, very regularly. So that's a really, really good point for us to be able to kind of tune in and see what's going on for them, their challenges, things they're coming up against, the opportunities they're seeing as well. I think I always tend to go down the challenge route because that tends to be the most interesting, but actually what opportunities are you seeing at the moment as well is a big question I do like to ask. So that's one side. But then the second side, you know, the organization I work for, myself, we all have this belief of community. And luckily we have that relationship with the market. So, I had an executive reach out to me on LinkedIn saying, "Hey, Catherine, I've just accepted a new job in this organization. Let's book in some content because I've got some really exciting things to tell you." And just being able to have that relationship with the community helps us keep our content really relevant. And then, you know, kind of speaking to the editorial side, which, you know, I don't touch so much, we do a lot of research surveys. So 100 plus kind of participants getting involved in that, which really helps us to keep our finger on the pulse of what's going on in the market for these executives.
Amazing. That's fantastic. So just going back to sort of your trajectory to get to where you were, you said that you studied social sciences. So did you do that at university, and what specific social science did you study?
Yeah, so I did, so it was a bachelor's of science and economics because there was a couple statistics modules within it. So data analytics has been a passion of mine from university. It's certainly not something that was, you know, kind of just born out of work. But it was a sociology course. And then within that, like I say, did the statistics, did crime and punishment as well. So I was very lucky because sociology is such a broad umbrella degree. I was able to dabble into psychology. I was able to dabble into criminology, which was really beneficial because you could basically tailor make a degree with all the best bits, as opposed to, you know, I had a few friends who did criminology, and that is what it says on the tin. They do a couple sociology modules, but most of it is kind of the crime and side. So from that, I was able to get a really diverse idea of what was going on in the social world, from the statistics quantitative view of data through to the more qualitative side and understanding social theory as well.
Amazing. And where sort of sociology is so broad, it, like you said, it's very, very beneficial to get that insight into many different aspects. And then how did you sort of narrow it down that you wanted to go into the data analytics?
Yeah, so well, this is where I say, you know, I think everything happens for a reason. And I think, you've got to go with the opportunities that present itself. I knew I wanted to continue. I'll rephrase that. I didn't want to continue into educate. Well, I did want to continue into education, but I knew I wanted to step. I didn't want to do a master's. I did apply for a PhD at the end of second year, because that's when you have to apply going into third. It's incredibly, incredibly competitive. Didn't get through to that, but I was able to pick up a couple internships during my third year, which was really great. But I knew I wanted to step into work. I was ready to earn some money, if I'm being honest, because being a student, you have a pretty tight purse, and I was ready to do that. And I knew I really enjoyed data. I really enjoyed my statistic model module. So it was a case of, right, what can I do with that? And then I was scrolling through Indeed, as I'm sure many people listening have done. And there was this role that was, you know, in the world of data analytics. It was, as I say, I entered as a producer. So in conferences and events, I'm an incredibly people person, which is why I loved sociology. So it kind of ticked all the boxes. And the other box it ticked at the time, because you've got to remember this is pre-COVID, was it was actually a working from home job. And wow. I was living in Cardiff. My family's from Somerset. I didn't know where I wanted to live, if I'm honest, because the world's your oyster. So having a job and having that security of having the job no matter where you lived was, another huge, huge plus. So that's kind of how I ended up where I am.
Wow, that flexibility is I think it's very, very beneficial as well. Yeah, it's amazing. So in terms of mentorship, were there any sort of people that you look up to, or anyone that aided your journey throughout your career thus far?
Yeah, so I mean, I've been very lucky to pick up mentors in each stage of my life, right from at the start, you know, made reference there at the introduction to Youth Parliament. I was lucky to be caught under the wing of some very, very amazing people who saw my passions and encouraged me through to college, through to university as well. In particular, there was a doctor within the University of Police Science Institute who really took me under her wing and would, support me. But then into work, I think when it comes to mentorship, you have to show your passion, and then the right person, I think, will mirror that, and you can kind of go from there. So yeah, I've had probably three people who I'd identify as mentors who I'm able to go to and talk through situations, whether they be hypothetical or whether they've been happening, and just say, how would you deal with this, or what would you do with this challenge? And I think it's so, so important. I mean, we did a top 30 under 30 list in our market, and every single one of them who was really, really successful, identified as our top 30, all access mentorship. So it's something I absolutely advocate, because most times if you are successful at a younger age and you're really kind of pushing forward, it's because someone else is pouring their wisdom into you, and it's your opportunity to take that or not. And sometimes that wisdom is, don't do this thing because this thing will happen. It's not always, you know, kind of pushing you in a set direction. It's about just opening your mind to other things. And I think there is a big difference between coaching and mentorship as well. And I mean the formality of both and understanding what you're looking for from each person, because if you're going to go to someone and say, hey, can you coach me in this, in my opinion, that's a more formal approach than mentorship, which, you know, is more organic, I think.
100%. Because as well, like you said, it's got to be that perfect match of the person that demonstrates their passion and the person that comes to them and is willing to sort of, you know, help them with that. And okay, so on a day-to-day basis, what does your sort of job role consist of? You did touch on this in the beginning, but sort of especially working from home pre-COVID, has anything changed? Has the workload become more intense?
I think we're doing a bit more of everything. Like many organizations, your portfolio has diversified to deal with the challenges of COVID. I mean, we're very lucky that being a smaller company, we are able to be flexible. So with that flexibility comes lots of options. So day to day, I'm researching guests for the podcast. I'm understanding that market. So whether that be hosting advisory board networking sessions or just having research calls with people, strategy wise, setting up we're in the midst of setting up our next global top 100 list, which will be announced in January. I mentioned before we hit record today, we're all talking about 2022 at the moment, so that's kind of where my world is looking forward. And then, you know, we are still hosting events both in person and virtual as well. So I was only in London last week at our information security event, which was really successful. People were really excited to be back. And then next week I'll be hosting a virtual version for our European audience. So it's a very diverse role that I have. It's probably not the most traditional kind of producer role, which is normally kind of event focused, and you work on a certain production scale of, you know, 6 weeks of getting your speakers, 2 weeks of research, and et cetera, et cetera. So again, as is my life, I tend to go for a bit more of a broad role, which I can kind of pick out all the things that I get to do and get supported to do as well.
Fantastic. And you know, the events that your company offer, how can you attend those events, and are they good opportunities for networking?
They are. So our community is senior executives in the data analytics IT space. So it is more for the older cohort. So I think your podcast listeners are probably going to be a little junior to tap in. But, you know, that being said, you know, what is available virtual and what is available on the business of data platform, I mean, absolutely dip into it, because, you know, if you really want to hear from this space, and it's also good opportunity, which has kind of happened organically, to learn a bit more about the leaders who you perhaps want to go and work for. Because, you know, especially when you've got leaders chatting to me about, you know, my passion area, which is diversity and inclusion, to me, I think that stands out as someone I'd absolutely go and work for, is someone that's, you know, going on a podcast and saying, hey, we're trying to be inclusive with our teams because we're trying to solve issues around ethical AI, for example. So definitely check out the content. But yeah, it is a good space to network. I mean, I think every events company under the sun has had to do a bit more thinking about what that looks like virtually, because humans are awkward, and you stick them all on a Zoom call and no one wants to come off mute. So you've got to be a bit creative. And again, this is where it kind of links into previous experience of many of our team members into psychology and neurology and how to engage people. Are just because they're on a Zoom, are they interacting with you? What value are they coming and expecting? So we've had to do a lot of out the box thinking, although I hate that phrase. I think it is a good opportunity for networking, and it will only evolve. And I think as we move back into in-person events, I think people are going to really crave the conference coffee, standing around, chatting, catching up types of interactions, which we've really missed over the last 2 years.
Absolutely. Yeah.
In terms of, you mentioned your podcast and also some of the live webinars that you do, which I believe you post to your YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. We normally leave this till the end, but I think it'll be good, given that we've touched on it, if you could mention where people could find that. Because I think the point that, you know, the events that your organization creates aren't necessarily for entry level candidates, but more so for executives. But I still think there's a lot of value in people watching that content, hearing about what's happening in the industry from the leaders of in that industry or in that space. So yeah, if you could share, that would be really helpful.
Absolutely. And I'll provide you the link so you can put them in the show notes as well. But I mean, the platform is just business-of-data.com. Pop onto LinkedIn, you'll find Corinium Global Intelligence, Business of Data, Business of InfoSec as well, which is our other platform for the information security space. And then, yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn as well. And it's all over my LinkedIn, various links anyway. But yeah, I'll pop you the link so you can put them in the show notes so they're easy to access.
Great. And yeah. I also saw that you do something around a monthly female executive webinar.
Yeah.
Would you be able to share some information about that? Just because I think also it's good to have kind of a focus on female leaders and in different industries. And then I think that will help to encourage other females or women to get into that 1,000 as well.
1,000%. I mean, I touched on it earlier. This is my passion center is around elevating voices. So for the last year, I've been running a monthly leading female executive discussion panel, which is global. So we have leaders that join us from South Africa through to San Francisco, London as well. And we talk about a topic. So we've spoken about cloud, AI, data for good, all sorts of topics now, except for our International Women's Day special. We don't talk about being a woman in data. I'm a big believer that it shouldn't be the only thing female leaders are dragged on to talk about. So for me, it's all about elevating voices organically and providing an example, because when you think data, I know particularly in my head, you have a certain visual of what that looks like. And at the moment, that is still the majority. So what we're trying to do is challenge that stereotype and say, actually, a data leader can look like this or it can look like that, and have that diversity so that there will be younger people looking at this and going, oh, wow, look at the chief strategy and AI officer for Levi Strauss, who happens to be a woman. Look at the chief data officer for Mersey First, a really big health company in the US, who happens to be a woman. And it's about providing those examples for upcoming talent. And again, I alluded to it earlier, some of the biggest challenges as a society we're going to face in the future around AI bias, around ethical AI, is going to need a diverse set of people sat around that table solving it. Because unfortunately, the issues where people of color aren't recognized by facial recognition is because no person of color is sat around that table to ask the questions. Why are we not testing on this data set? This data set doesn't include people from this background. Until we have a diverse set of people sat around the table, those challenges are going to continue. And that's not what we want.
Absolutely. So it's an intrinsic problem. So that's definitely the first step to resolving it. And as you said, you can't be something if you've never seen it. So to do it organically instead of voicing, the bad points of maybe working in data and the challenges you may face, it's about amplifying the positive voices as well.
Absolutely. And I think, none of us are daft. We know what the challenges are like. If you're going to walk into a majority room of any space and you're the minority, you know there are going to be challenges there. I don't think, we need to kind of put that on the label and kind of spell it out. We know that. But you've hit the nail on the head there, Hannah, by saying that it is about elevating the positive sides and saying that we exist as well. That female leaders in this space exist. That can be half the challenge, because I think we can quite easily brush it away saying, oh, it's a male space, but that's not actually true.
Absolutely, 100%. So just going back into your role then, so what would you say is the best thing about your role that you're working currently?
The best thing, gosh, that's going to be hard to just nail it down to one thing, I think, but there's a special thing that happens in an interview, and I'm sure you both know this as interviewers for this podcast, that when someone is really in their flow, they're really talking about something they care deeply about, there's a little twinkle in their eye, and you get to see that and you get to engage in that conversation. And I get to do that so regularly. As I mentioned, I was at that event last week, and I planned to do a 10-minute interview that ended up lasting 25, because this particular executive, I got him right where his passion center was. And it's just amazing, because it feels like there's just sparkles emanating off of people when they're in that moment where you're really asking them questions that they're excited about, and you can tell that they genuinely care about the thing they're talking about. And it's just so nice to be part of that. and to be able to experience that type of energy off of someone. And then it's even greater to be able to package that up as content and spread that energy through the podcast, through our weekly newsletter, whatever that might be. Because that sort of energy attracts other people. And then you get an email in your inbox that says, hey, just listen to this. I've got thoughts on this too. Let's book in a call. And it snowballs. So that's probably the best kind of conceptual side. But then if I was going to say a practical side around my role is the fact that it is remote, and it means that I can have a life outside of work, which I know we all want and should expect. I don't think it should be negotiable. So that's another great side of my role as well.
Fantastic. Then on the flip side of that, what would you say is the most challenging aspect?
Challenging aspect is probably what I had challenged with probably a year into my role, which is more so less, you know, not about the organization and more about my journey into work from university, which is in up to university, up to academia, you have to show you know something, and you get a little star, or you get a grade, or you get something that says, well done, Catherine, you know your thing. When you step into work, they've hired you because they assume you know it. So suddenly you're now in a very different culture, and you're in a different situation where, you know, there is no gold star necessarily for just doing your job. It's about going extra. So the challenge I think many people experience when they come from their graduation and they're now into a job is actually that transition of how you live day to day. You're not working towards a grade necessarily. You're not working, you know, no one's going to come and give you a pat on the back necessarily. Now, I'm very lucky the organization I work with does highlight people's success. We do monthly shout outs and things like that. So you do still have that side of it, but you do have to get used to the fact there's not going to be that structured working towards a goal, and there's no show that you know it because it's just assumed you should probably know it.
It's very true. Yeah, the accolades you only get, I think this has been highlighted in previous podcasts as well, is only if you go above and beyond what you're meant to do. So yeah, I guess it's a big transition.
Yeah, and I mean, even that, again, it depends on the culture of an organization, because I think this is where you can find yourself in a toxic work environment, which is where people are striving to do more and more and more, and suddenly you're actually doing far more than your job role, you're doing far more than your salary, and actually because of that expectation they're getting double for half. And you know, you have to make sure that the organization you are putting lots of hours of your life towards doesn't take advantage of that as well. So you do have to, that's something I would always suggest people do, is, you know, watch that you're not giving yourself without having that reward, that commission, that side of it. And it's not just expected that you go above and beyond for potentially nothing.
That's very true. Yeah. And to avoid that sort of burnout as well, I feel like a lot of people have experienced during the pandemic, because working from home is assumed to maybe be easier and whatnot at your own comfort. But I find a lot of people have said that they're working excessive hours.
Exactly. Setting up those boundaries, and again, this is something I'm very interested in around the conversation of privilege. I mean, I'm very, very lucky during the pandemic because I was already remote working. The house that we previously rented had an office space. The house that we're in now has an office space. I have a space I can put work. I can say at, you know, 6 p.m., 5:30, whatever time it is, close the door, work is done. I'm now going to go into my own space. For those people who had to work on the dining room or kitchen table whilst also homeschooling children and everything else, where is that boundary? There's no physical boundary. So therefore, you're going to have to put in a mental one. And even then, the laptop's on the side, or the kids have gone to bed, or I'll just pop on and do some emailing. And I think that was fine in the start because business needed you. You know, you wanted to keep your job. Many people were in that space. But now I think we're in this weird limbo time of hybrid. A lot of people, certainly that I speak to, are kind of going into the office maybe 1 or 2 days a week. And again, I think that time has to be negotiated and understood as to how much you're going to push in versus the time that is home time, the time that is for yourself.
100%. So am I right in saying that you stayed with the same company since you graduated, but you just changed roles within that? So how was that? And Yeah, could you just talk a bit about that sort of transition between roles? But I'm supposed that you really like the work culture at your current organization, so you stayed.
I do. I would be hard pressed to find another place like it. And I mean, our CEO made me a promise within my first couple of weeks, saying as long as I'm excited about opportunities, he'll continue to provide them. And he's given that double each time. So each of the promotions that I've had in different roles has always been because I do like to pride myself again with kind of any example from kind of 14 up is the case of raising your hand and say, I'll do it, I'll give it a go. And that type of culture is what we have within the organization, that it is very much everyone's willing to give things a go, try. If it doesn't work, that's okay. What have we learned from that? And that type of culture is where I want to be. I don't want to be scared of making mistakes, because that means you can't innovate. Because unless you try and learn, you won't grow. And I mean, over the last three and a bit years, I've seen the organization grow in so many different directions. I mean, the content platform is a great example. You know, we didn't have a podcast, we didn't have our broadcast arm and things like that, and or editorials. So it's been really exciting to see that growth. And it's why I mentioned earlier about you've got to go careful about organizations' culture, because I've seen from my friends what they have at their organizations. And you know, I would never use the word family culture, because I think that's very, very toxic. As soon as someone calls an organization a family, that, you know, it bleeds into things. But I think what the organization has that I work for is a culture where family kind of comes first. And that's why it's remote, is because our senior leadership wanted to be there with their families, rather than spending it on the tube commuting. So
it's very efficient. And in terms of the podcast, how did that sort of come about, and do you have any tips for podcasting?
So it came about, again, we just wanted more content. It was in our plan, and then the pandemic happened and it kind of spurred us on anyway. But it's been a really good opportunity to have more focused conversations. So generally speaking, our podcasts are themed around a particular topic. So again, previously I mentioned about natural language processing or data strategy or data literacy, et cetera, et cetera. So it allows us to kind of dig deeper onto one particular area. Advice for podcasting is, I suppose, just try and make your guests feel comfortable. I think I'm very fortunate that I do this for a living, so I sometimes forget that actually people can be quite nervous. So just eliminating the anxiety behind it, you know, saying, hey, if things are going wrong, we can just pause it, or if, you know, you get a call, we'll carry on, or we can edit this bit out. Just doing all the things that you know you're not going to have to do. You know you're not going to have to edit it, because they're going to be fine. But just giving people that reduction
reassurance,
of anxiety, yeah. I think is absolutely key.
100%. And in terms of your role as well, so what key skills would you say are required to work in the business of data area and the data analytics?
I think, so if I take the first part of that question, which is my role, I think being curious. I was always accused of being a very nosy child, and I think that's helped being in my career and as an adult, is kind of understanding, you know, wanting to ask that why question a bit more. So you know, when someone says, oh, sorry, Catherine, we're going to have to push this piece of content because I'm so busy. Why are you busy? What are you up to? Oh, we're doing this strategy. Oh, why has that come about? Oh, well, there's been a change in budget. And just asking those questions, being a bit nosy, because you understand that environment a bit more, so that when you do eventually get to catch up, you can say, hey, you've had quite a big strategy shift. What's that been about? And actually, that can be the best part of the content previous to what you planned. So being curious and also being ambitious. Don't put yourself in a box or in categories and say, well, this is my role, this is what I'm going to do. I mean, you know, it's not my business to be doing marketing, yet I'll very much be asking questions to our head of marketing, how I can support him in what he's doing, because it interests me. So don't just keep yourself in a box. But then if you're asking around the data analytics space, you know, how can you what are the key skills there? If there's two key skills or two features of a good leader that I've noticed, is again that curiosity data people love to be curious. They like to dig themselves into the data, see what story it's going to tell them, but then have that growth mindset as well. So what do I want to do in the future? And again, this is part of the challenge we're seeing in that market, in that they're calling it the great resignation, because people keep moving around jobs now, because they're wanting, you know, better salary. They're wanting to be working on the coolest projects, which makes for some industries really challenging. If you're in the public sector, for example, where perhaps you've got a bit more regulation, and you're not able to do the most advanced analytics because of where the organizations are. So yeah, growth and curiosity are two big skills, I think, that get you far in that space.
Fantastic. That's all the questions I have anyways for today. So I'll pass back over to William, but that was very insightful. Thank you.
Thanks.
Great, thanks, Hannah. So sorry, you touched on before around you always had an interest in data and data analytics, but in terms of the route that you've gone into that industry is not necessarily analyzing data. And mm-hmm. I think that's a really good or useful insight, helpful insight, because I think there's a lot of people out there that will be interested in a specific industry or job sector, but may not have trained or feel that their strengths lie in a specific area such as data analysis. But there's a lot of roles that support or wrap around data analysis or within that industry. So you can still be associated with the industry in the industry that you have that passion or interest for, but you don't have to do that one specific job role. How have you found that, and how would you advise people going about kind of identifying those opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, it is difficult because obviously, again, you have the most traditional routes, which is, you know, you like data, so you go and be a data analyst. That makes sense, right? But it's about exploring yourself as a wider, more holistic. What do you enjoy doing? You know, again, I mentioned at the start, I'm a very people-y people person. A lot of data roles are there is obviously a team aspect depending on what you're doing, but it's quite independent working, whereas I prefer to be out talking to people. And it's about almost doing that analysis yourself of yourself. What do you enjoy doing? And then kind of meeting that up. And again, thinking about the wider world. So I suppose events and conferences and the work that I do with content almost fits in the more media space of, you know, because we provide content for the community in kind of a news-like fashion. So it's about thinking wider than the traditional. And then the question there about how do you find these examples? I mean, or how do you find these opportunities? One word, networking. Go on to LinkedIn. Now, LinkedIn, I found, was such a bizarre concept until, it's like a little club. Like, once you're in, you understand it. Until that, you're like, what is this weird, old-looking platform full of professional people talking random stuff? But just go in there and just put up statuses about what you're up to or what you're interested in. You know, start that right back when you're in college or even school. If you're involved in school projects, you know, using those hashtags, and people pick you up and they say, oh, you know, if you're interested in STEM and you're on this summer program, actually, we do a graduates program. So come chat to us in a couple of years time and you could do et cetera, et cetera. So it's about networking and making those connections with people and just having a wider view of the world. I mean, I mentioned before we hit record here today, I would have loved this sort of podcast when I was younger, because you have what's in your social world. You have what your parents did, you have what your grandparents did, you have what is in your school and your area. And there'll be a subset of knowledge that just is assumed. But then wider than that, how do you access that? And again, that comes into privilege and what you have in your social world. So if you're already listening to your podcast, you're already doing the right thing. And it's just about, you know, expanding that network. And don't be afraid to ask questions and put yourself out there. If there's someone that you find really interesting that you find, I did that with a member of parliament when I was younger, ask, can I shadow you? Can I come and spend a week? I mean, you know, depending on your school, college situation, or even at university, very seldom would an academic institution turn you down for that because they know it's good for you. So, you know, don't wait for opportunities to present themselves. Go out there and find them as well.
Yeah, I agree with that in terms of networking, the importance of that, and to start it earlier rather than later. So thank you. And we're going to lead into wrapping up. But before we do that, we've got three sentences that we always ask our guests to complete. So I'll start off and then hand over to you to complete the sentence. So the first one is, success to me means?
Success to me means living in your flow.
Okay. And then could you elaborate on that a little bit for our audience?
Yeah. So I don't want to say happiness because I feel like that's so stereotypical and everyone will say that, but living in your flow, like I mentioned with the passion around interviewing and seeing that sparkle, just living in that moment of where you're not looking at the clock, you're not, whatever you're doing. So whether that's at home or work, you're in your flow and you're just enjoying the present moment.
Yeah, because otherwise you can put too much pressure on yourself because you're expecting or you're planning what's going to happen rather than going with the flow. Although I do always encourage to have a plan, but I do agree in terms of just go with it. And I think a few guests have said happiness before, and also similar to flow. So we're starting to get a real common theme, which is great. So the next one is, I wish I had known.
I wish I had known nobody knows everything all the time. In the fact that you sometimes look at these people in places and you think, goodness me, they're so knowledgeable, they know everything about it, but actually most people don't know everything. And we're all a little bit making it up at the time and we're on this journey and we're finding it out. So I wish I'd known that everyone is in that position of learning and knowledge, and there's seldom rarely a person that knows everything.
Great, thank you. And then the final one is, the best advice I could give.
The best advice I could give is those opportunities and those conversations where you get that little butterfly feeling in your stomach, do those things because that means you're growing.
Great. Yep. Perfect. And yeah, I think that's a great place to end it then.
Amazing.
So we did touch on it briefly in the show, but just to, before we go, could you let people know where they can find you?
Yep, so I'll pop the links in the show notes for you guys, but find me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and yeah, just Catherine King.
Great, thank you, Catherine. I'm going to hand over to Hannah to see us out.
Fantastic. So thank you for listening and watching today's episodes. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe to the Hikamo channel, and let us know any other career content you would like to see. Until next time, bye-bye.